Welcome back to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm your host, Graham Richmond, and joining me for another episode of Wiretaps is Alex Brown. Alex, good to get back at these. As some of our listeners may or may not know, I've been on vacation, so we've been trying to respond to your Wiretaps posts on ApplyWire and get these in. This is a special edition that we're recording actually from England and Italy simultaneously.
Yes.
So Alex, you've picked out a number of great entries, and I you mentioned to me earlier that you wanted me to just put out a little call for folks to actually mention an interest in being on Wiretaps when they post their ApplyWire entries or any wire entries that they're putting up there. Obviously, these days we're focused on ApplyWire, it being application season. So please, when you post, just mention if you want to be featured on the show, we're happy to do it. Just give us a sign and let us know, and we'll get to it. So Alex, anything else you wanted to add?
No, I think we've got four great candidates, so I think we should kick on with it.
All right. So our first Wiretaps candidate, we have a woman who has a 3.28 on the GRE, a 3.5 GPA, and 3 years of work experience. And this person, in their pre-MBA career, she's been doing brand marketing in the consumer goods industry with two different startups. She is also a Venture for America fellow. And her post-MBA career goals are to work in venture capital, entrepreneurship, nonprofit, and special interest. Now, she is not hoping to start business school until the fall of 2021. So she's a couple years out here. Her location, Detroit, Michigan, hoping to end up in San Fran or Seattle, or just the West Coast in general. And she offered quite a bit of really helpful detail in the notes. She's got a degree from a top 10 public school in poli-sci and history. And she did a lot of, kind of research at a think tank while a student. She, lots of kind of student activities. We'll get into those as we review further. But just very rich kind of background in terms of the, amount of involvement she's had. And she's really looking to kind of marry an interest she has in entrepreneurship with kind of social impact focused work that she'd done in undergrad. And she's interested in MBA programs that have like an entrepreneurial reputation and don't necessarily conform to like a traditional finance MBA culture. She actually says finance bro culture. Alex, what was your take on this woman's candidacy?
Well, like a lot of the candidates we've seen on Wiretaps, I think this candidate is potentially super strong. Some really interesting aspects to her candidacy from her undergraduate record and her involvement as an undergraduate student, which schools really like, as well as her career, Venture for America, her continued career in brand marketing. She just looks to me like someone who's made impact in each of the avenues she's pursued. And that's a clear marker for a strong MBA candidate, sorority president, et cetera, et cetera. So lots of sort of potential leadership opportunities that she's pursued. As you noted, she's thinking a year or so ahead, which is very good. And I think some of her commentary in the notes section signals that she's early in this process and kind of learning about the process a little bit, which I think is absolutely fantastic. And the point that you make about trying to avoid the sort of MBA programs with that too financy bro MBA culture, I think tends towards the myth versus the reality of what the experience can be like at top tier business schools. And I know there have been incidents reported in the media in recent years of maybe some of this culture manifesting, but I would say my experience and sort of understanding the industry for over a long period of time, that the culture at most top schools would be very appealing for this candidate. Lots of opportunities at most top schools for someone pursuing entrepreneurship with long-term goals in the social impact space. So if I was this candidate, I would be targeting the very best And I think she has the wherewithal to target the very best with her experiences to date. And the other thing that she was a little bit concerned with, which is, again, something important to address, is she feels that she might be at a disadvantage not coming from a pedigreed firm, i.e. a top consulting firm or a top investment bank, top tech firm, the sort of more traditional feeder firms going into the MBA. And my response to that, which I think is absolutely correct, is rather than worry about the brand name of the firms in which she's worked or any candidate's worked, be more concerned with your impact, where you've worked, and how that impact matches the sorts of impact that someone coming from a top feeder firm might have had in their experiences. So not forgetting that schools like differentiation. They don't want everybody from McKinsey. Whilst McKinsey is a great feeder into top programs with lots of quality people coming from McKinsey, if everybody came from McKinsey, then why would they go to an MBA program in the first place? They might as well stay at McKinsey and learn this stuff.
Right.
So I think quite honestly, Graham, this candidate's shooting too low.
Yeah, you know, one of the things, so a few things jumped out at me. I think, number one, the school list was a bit strange, right? So she's got, you know, and I neglected to actually share this in the profile, but she, you know, she mentions Berkeley, MIT, and University of Washington, Foster, and then undecided. So she kind of, she's leaving the field open, but I just, you know, and not to say that any of the three schools on her list are bad by any stretch. They're great, and they probably fit well with her goals. But I was sort of like, wow, someone who wants to work in venture capital doesn't have, you know, the usual suspects on the list like Stanford or Harvard or Wharton. And I wondered, like, what's driving that? Is it a lack of self-confidence in terms of her candidacy, like being able to get into those programs? And for that, I would say, you know, GRE looks great. GPA could be better, but it's still right there. I mean, it's, you know, maybe the average at some of these very top schools is a tad above that, but I wouldn't worry about that. I do hear her on the non-pedigreed sort of background. And all that I would say is it just may require a little more work on her part. I mean, I think you're right. Schools want differentiation. But it is known that, you know, some of the top schools, you know, they like to go to firms that they're familiar with, or they certainly have a way of kind of scoring like, oh, is this person coming from a top tier consultancy or bank or not? But when someone's so kind of off the beaten path as she is, you know, in terms of doing brand marketing and the consumer goods industry with startups, I feel like, you know, it's just up to her to explain what those jobs have entailed and for her recommenders to write well and, you know, make it clear that she's coming from a quality place in terms of her work experience. But yeah, I just felt like, why isn't she aiming a little higher? I was pretty saddened to read that comment about the kind of traditional finance bro-y MBA culture, because I feel like, as you say, that's largely myth. I mean, if she were to go and spend a day at Wharton or Harvard or Stanford, I think she would find that that's not at all what's going on at these schools. I think that's kind of a myth out of, you know, some of these movies and stereotypes from the 80s and 90s or something. But the MBA today is a different thing, and I would really encourage her to spend some time on these campuses if she's worried about that at all. But I loved her candidacy. I mean, I think, you know, it sounds really great. I mean, she's, you know, the Venture for America fellow is a nice feather in her cap. And yeah, there's just a lot to like here. And so I would just encourage her to, you know, put her best foot forward, make sure the recs are solid and everything else, but maybe expand the scope and try to hit some even higher ranked programs on her target.
I mean, I think, quite honestly, she should download Stanford's application right now and start working on that first, that key essay, what means most to you and why. And I think you spend a year hacking away at that essay, you're going to be I see no reason why she doesn't apply to Stanford.
Yeah. So, and I think it's what matters most to you and why. And she could spend time. I know Kirsten, the director of admissions at Stanford, listens to this podcast sometimes. So I want to make sure we get the essay question perfectly right. But anyway, yeah, I think that's a great point, is that the sooner she starts thinking about some of these critical matters, you know, with respect to the essays and mapping out her course, the better off she's going to be. But again, we love seeing people who are, you know, already focused on the 2021 intake. That gives her a lot of time to kind of work on things. One last thing I was kind of wondering about is, you know, she has kind of a poli-sci history background and a 3.5 GPA. I wondered if you thought it would be worthwhile for her to like take a, you know, like a calc or a stats course online and get an A in it to show that she's, you know, very, very much ready to make this pivot into kind of pure business and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I think that will help. And she's got plenty of time to do stuff like that. But I think overall, this is a very strong candidate. And I think if she does tackle the Stanford essay this year in advance of next season's application season, I think it sets her up for all the other schools too, because that's such an interesting essay for sort of introspection. So the earlier you do that kind of stuff in the admissions process, the better you're going to be in the years ahead, I think.
Yeah, fair enough. So again, a lot to like with this candidate. Let's move on to Wiretap's candidate number two. So this candidate has a 780 on the GMAT, a 3.13 GPA, 3 years of work experience, located in San Francisco and hoping to stay there. Pre-MBA career has been in product management, and they are hoping to move into consulting or technology, and they're thinking about, you know, kind of Bain, BCG, McKinsey. Another candidate that's not thinking of applying until next fall, so intake year of 2021. And the school selection is pretty vast, but very top, you know, top end focus. There's Berkeley, Columbia, Dartmouth, Harvard, MIT, Kellogg, Stanford, Wharton, and Yale. And this person points out that they did an undergrad from a top public university in computer science. They graduated in 2018, so very recently, obviously, and they joined a well-known software company in a kind of selective rotational, you know, one of these rotational programs. Promoted early, doing lots of interesting things at work. Hoping to go, as I said, work for MBB after business school, and then maybe back into product or tech strategy with a kind of broader set of skills. and they, you know, they have a side hustle. They're a venture partner with a small seed fund that they've raised. Looks like it's double digits assets under management in terms of millions of dollars. So, you know, lots of things going on here. What was your take on this person? They did mention they're kind of wondering what else they might want to do with their extracurricular time, if we have any advice there. But any other thoughts, or what is your take on this candidacy?
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple of things in this candidate's profile that to me appear to show that this is potentially another very strong candidate. Obviously, super high GMAT with a 780. And obviously, we know schools don't make decisions based directly off a test score, but it does show that the guy... I believe is a guy, but anyway, they're super intelligent, so that's fine. And it looks like they've done well at work. They've got promoted early. They've moved on. In terms of getting a more into project management and product management, and realizing the gap in their learning now to get the MBA to do what they want to do in the long run. And so forth. So to me, that was all very positive. I was a little bit curious about the undergraduate GPA at 3.13, and then stating that mostly it was because they didn't really like the program. Yet they pursued coming out of undergrad. They obviously went into computer programming related field directly. So that, I guess that just requires a little bit of explanation, because clearly they are smart and they've done well. I thought the venture partnership stuff on the side, that looks like it could be make for some very interesting stories and in the MBA application, and it shows sort of, it adds, I think, some weight to the person's experience and plan and goals. So they can tie it back to that, not just what they were getting in terms of their professional experience. So from that perspective, I thought everything was actually very good. This person's obviously thinking ahead, which is a very good thing. I think, you know, the admissions process, if you're thinking a year or two ahead, you can actually make some strategic moves now to better position yourself maybe in another year. So is there something that this person's passionate about outside of, you know, VC, tech, entrepreneurship, which is the theme of the work experience and so forth. It's just something this person's truly passionate about that they could actually ratchet up a little bit more over the next year. And the reason for that is you're just showing another dimension of your personality and character, and so forth. So we had a little bit of back and forth with that, and I think there was some debating stuff, and a bit of golf, and taught high school kids speech and debate as a coach. So what I would say to this candidate, if there's on that teaching kids stuff, if there's something that you could be doing over the next year that involves you a little bit more in that endeavor, maybe you're managing some other people doing the same thing, you're making a bigger footprint in that regard, that might be very useful. But yeah, overall, I think this is a potentially a strong candidate. Just iron out a couple of things. They're obviously shooting for the top. So you might say it would be worth adding one or two more schools, maybe in the top 16, into the mix. That might make sense. But I would say that this candidate has the potential to be a very strong candidate.
Or even kind of pairing back. Like I do agree. Like this is kind of the list is basically M7 minus, you know, I think minus Booth or something, and then they throw in Tuck and Haas or something. So. This is
and
a
Yale,
top,
which
and
are
Yale,
basically
yeah.
the three right,
the next,
right
yeah.
behind the M7.
So it's sort of like I'm going to apply to the top 10. And so part of me feels like, first of all, they're only realistically going to be able to do, you know, 4 to 6 applications effectively. And so, yeah, so maybe paring this down and getting another school into the list that's a little bit more in the kind of safety zone or, you know, or just kind of medium difficulty, because these are all high level difficulty schools. My take on this candidacy, though, is the GPA really jumps out at me, and I know you discussed it, and I, you know, when I see a 3.1, my eyebrows raise, especially for M7 schools, and I think the GMAT is clearly a home run, and that's the number one thing you can do to kind of counter a low GPA. But I was actually worried by the way they responded when we asked what the issue was, because you know, normally you like to hear, well, you know, it's a top public school, really challenging major. And, you know, I challenged myself and, you know, I ended up with a kind of B+ average and or a little bit better than a B average. And, you know, it was challenging. And I, you know I can do better. And I think the GMAT is a good representation of my academic aptitude, as opposed to, well, I just, you know, wasn't too into it. I was immature. I wanted there to be some like extenuating circumstance, like, oh, everyone in our major, you know, the best person in our major had a 3.2 and, you know, or the school was incredibly challenging. Or so that's going to be harder to swallow, because that makes me wonder, well, what, you know, what is this person going to do if they get to business school and don't like some of the courses? So that was one thing. The other thing I was a little worried about, and again, there's still time and we love the fact this person has so much time before they're going to apply, but I was kind of like, well, it's kind of a computer science engineering type, possibly male. And, you know, one of the activities is golf. And I was thinking, wow, they're ticking sort of all the kind of classic boxes of like, what do people, you know, applying to business school do often? So I agree with you that going the debate route or the teaching kids route might be more interesting and obviously fits well with what they've done in the past, as opposed to like ratcheting up how much time they're spending golfing or teaching people golf or something. I just think that's going to be an overrepresented activity in the pool, right? So, and I think building alternative transcript might be smart. Take you know, micro or macro or calc or stats or accounting. Take a couple of classes, get A's in them to show that you're classroom ready. But that's my take on this candidate. Did you have any other?
Yeah, and doing that, Graham, I think is simply about reassuring the admissions committee that you're motivated and committed to the process. It has nothing to do with, are you smart or not? I mean, this guy clearly is smart. But smart people don't always apply themselves in the classroom because they think, wow, this isn't important, this is whatever, it doesn't directly tie to my goals, so I'll just coast through this class. And that's not what business schools want to admit. And they don't have to, because they can admit someone with a similar profile that has a 3.6 or 3.7 GPA and has showed that commitment. So the alternative transcript recommendation, which I would agree with, is all about just showing commitment and motivation for the process.
Exactly. So let's get to Wiretap's candidate number three. So this candidate has a 320 on the GRE, a 3.87 GPA, 4 years of work experience, and a pre-MBA career with Teach for America and state level Department of Education posts. They want to apply, as I mentioned, for 2020. So they're working on their applications now, presumably. And they are located in Tennessee and hoping to end up in a kind of East Coast urban center. They're hoping to work in consulting and maybe even nonprofit or special interests. They mentioned Bain and McKinsey. And I know that both of those institutions or companies have some nonprofit consulting work that they do as well. Target schools are Georgetown McDonough, Michigan Ross, NYU Stern, Chicago Booth, and UVA Darden. And I should mention that in the notes, this person first of all mentioned that they would love to be on Wiretaps. So we like to see that, and they put it in kind of a bracketed so that we would see it right away. So we're happy to feature them. And they also mentioned that they're planning to apply to dual MBA MPP, so Masters in Public Policy programs, because they really think that the public and social sectors deserve the expertise and capacity of top MBA graduates. So that's a bunch of background. Why don't I turn it over to you, and you can kind of walk through some of the conversation you had with this person on the site, and just give us your overview of what you think of this candidate.
Yeah, I mean, I think this candidate in some respects is reasonably similar to our first candidate in terms of sort of non-traditional experience coming into the MBA program, which can be very good, i.e. non-traditional, sort of it creates different conversations in the classroom, different sets of experiences and so on and so forth. So that's the very positive of that. And then the challenge, much like the first candidate, is showing that the impact that they've had through the less traditional career is strong and relative to candidates coming from more traditional feeder institutions. But this candidate, again, I think like the first candidate, did come across to me as being a strong candidate, capable of showing that quality in their experiences, and clearly their goals are laudable and credible, and they're trying to hit that sweet spot where they can translate between the public policy folks and the business folks, and gearing themselves up to be that to be that person. So you see candidates like this. So wanting to do that is not entirely unusual. And obviously pursuing the MPP, MBA dual degree is one avenue of doing it. Some would argue you can still do it through the MBA whilst taking the right coursework in your second year. So, don't presume you have to go for both degrees, not to dismiss the MPP, which is a very, very strong degree also. So I did like that about this person. Classical piano, that's quite an interesting undergraduate degree, classical piano and public policy, I guess. So that's different. They're going to Wharton, they're going to help with some of the activities. I'm having a brain freeze right now, Graham, but you understand what I'm saying with follies, that's it, and stuff like that. And all schools do that kind of stuff, so that would be fantastic. So I think a lot to like with this person. Everything makes perfect sense, and they're planning to retake the GRE to bolster that up a little bit. They have a very strong GPA already, and they've already also taken through their public policy undergrad. They've taken macro and micro, public finance and so on and so forth. So they've done some of that type of coursework that should make the admissions committee feel comfortable. 3.87 GPA, absolutely fantastic. So I thought, this person should shoot a little bit higher in terms of their school selection. They got Chicago Booth in there, which obviously is a very strong M7 program. I thought they could have added a couple more M7 programs in there, be a little bit more aggressive in their school choices.
So you raise a really interesting question, which is, do they need the dual degree? Because when I looked at this, I was like, okay, great, dual degree candidate. That's interesting and makes sense. But you just kind of made me wonder, since they did it as an undergrad, the policy side, it makes me wonder, like, do they have to do both? But assuming that they're going to do both, I think some of the things that jumped out at me were, the GRE score, if it stays at 320, we're kind of in one situation, which is, maybe the list of schools here makes a lot of sense. If they boost it, which I would hope, they would do. I mean, they have such a high GPA. We know this person's smart and they're probably working really hard to prepare for the test. So assuming they get it up to like 325 or somewhere in there, suddenly a whole bunch of other doors open up. And I think, as you say, adding some other top schools makes sense. I was a little puzzled by their choice, like knowing, and I'm not an expert on the master's in public policy side of this, but I know enough to be maybe dangerous. And so I was a little puzzled as to why there weren't some of the better MPP offerings here. So for example, Columbia has a program, SEPA, that's quite good. And so one can pair the MBA with the SEPA policy degree. Wharton has a joint degree with John Hopkins, JFK and HBS is always a nice pair. And even Princeton has Woodrow Wilson, which doesn't have a formal partnership with an MBA, but does allow for it from a host of different schools. You can kind of petition them and you can do a joint degree. So I just, kind of wondered what was driving the school selection. Was it, and again, not to say that the schools on this list don't have good policy programs as well, but I was a little puzzled and wondering, maybe some of it was that, I don't know, was it location-based, but, they mentioned they want to be on the East Coast, and yet, you see Ross and Booth on the list. So I was just, trying to figure out what's driving this, and maybe it's something about the nature of the policy offerings at these other programs that are on their list, as opposed to me thinking more MBA-oriented. So, but in any event, I think boosting the GRE is the key. I know they're going to take it later this month, and I wish them the best of luck. And so hopefully they can boost it, and that may really open a whole other set of opportunities. So that's my take. I mean, I think, everything else, like you say, lines up pretty well. I mean, it's a pretty interesting candidate, and I like the, the government experience and Teach for America. I mean, those are things that we don't see that often in the applicant pool, but they're not unheard of. So we see them enough where to a point where admissions officers are familiar and like these kind of candidates. So I think there's a lot to offer.
And I think that last point, and like these candidates, when you see a candidate with this kind of profile, you're kind of rooting for them to be strong all around. You want this type of profile, but then have them really back it up with substantial experiences to show that sort of leadership and that impact and so on and so forth. Know that, again, like the first candidate, the admissions committee is rooting for you. They want you to show that you are a strong candidate, because they know that if you are a strong candidate, you will add a different voice in the classroom.
Right, exactly. All right, so without further ado, let's move on to Wiretap's candidate number 4. This candidate has a GPA of a 3.7. with 7 years of work experience, located in Florida, hoping to start school in the fall of 2021. So this is, we're 3 out of 4 today on folks that wanna, they have a pre-MBA career in supply chain management with the US Air Force. And they're hoping to pivot out of military and into consulting with kind of, Bain, BCG, McKinsey. Now the real wrinkle in this candidacy that I wanna just call our listeners' attention to is that this person actually entered the military pre-college, right? So they actually earned an associate's degree in supply chain management while they were doing their service. And they're now finishing a bachelor's in international business. And it sounds like it's all kind of concurrent with their work in the military. So while this person has 7 years of experience, my guess is that those 7 years started around age 18, if I had to guess. And so that puts this person at, 24 years old. But you know, with 7 years of experience and simultaneously kind of working towards wrapping up the bachelor's. And, you know, one of the things that they wondered about was whether there was any issue with the fact that they kind of worked first and earned the earned their undergraduate degree second. And so I wanted to get your take on that. I know you had some back and forth with them on ApplyWire. And I also should mention that this person did indicate a desire to be featured on the Wiretaps podcast. So here they are. And Alex, I'll turn it over to you. I'm curious to hear what you think of this person because it is a little unusual, but I think there's a lot going on here. So yeah, what's your take?
Yeah, no, again, another very interesting candidate, but certainly a candidate that's done things a little back to front in terms of, you know, your more traditional candidates that we see. So their work experience is it is all before their undergraduate degree. And lots of schools will say, you know, we only consider experience post-undergrad and so on and so forth. But they're saying that under the guise that, you know, people typically go to their undergraduate, like you say, at the age of 18, do that for 4 years, and then begin their work experience. So so this candidate's different. And I would sort of put this sort of candidate and the profile in the sort of context of maybe like a bootstrapper or you know, the type of candidate that sort of, you know, had to sort of plow their own pathway at the beginning of their career, using the military to do that, and then has sort of, I think really found themselves in the military and did very well. I mean, he explained some of the examples of things that they were involved in from a supply chain management standpoint and how, you know, leading teams of people senior to him and stuff like that. And sort of some of the other examples seemed really interesting. So it does seem to me that the person has done well once they really got their sort of career going, as it were, like seeking out opportunities and stuff like that, which is always a very good thing. So from that perspective, I thought this candidate can be very interesting. No doubt when the application comes in and the readers start looking at it, they're going to be thinking, probably not. So this candidate's going to have to convince them, probably yes, by really highlighting these experiences and applying to business school, top business schools, coming out of military as an enlisted in the military, you are in the minority. And the assumption is that officers have had a better set of experiences based on, you know, X, Y, and Z. And for the most part, that's probably going to be true. But in this candidate's case, I think they can make a case that they have had some really interesting experiences. They can parlay that into a rational choice for their post-career in supply chain management and so forth. So lots of potentially positive stuff here. And as I noted to this candidate when I was at Wharton, I do remember one candidate coming into the school who was enlisted and did very well at Wharton. So obviously he managed to convince the admissions committee he was right for the job. The guy's obviously got to complete their undergraduate degree and do very well in their standardized tests, but I've got a feeling they're going to do that. Because again, they're more mature now, they've found themselves, they've gone on a real strong progressive career path within the military, and I think that they, you know, for the schools that they've listed, I think can be within reach with a strong test score and wrapping up that degree.
Yeah, and just because I neglected to say it, the schools they've listed are Duke, UCLA, UNC, and USC Marshall. And so, you know, I guess I agree. I mean, it is unusual for someone to enlist in the military, you know, at age 18, skip kind of going to university and do that for a while and then earn the bachelor's on the back end or simultaneously with the work experience. But as we know, you know, admissions officers do like military experience, and this person has, you know, lots of leadership experience in spades. I mean, there's lots to like here. And it seems like the, you know, the GPA 3.7 is solid. I guess, you know, to me, a lot's going to center on the test score, because that's going to be the sort of way to benchmark this person, because we don't know, like, what's the caliber of the education they've been pursuing part-time, like, first they got an associate's, you know, so there are a lot of, like, question marks, and I think they could silence a lot of that by just hitting it out of the park on one of the standardized tests, and they have time, you know, so I do tend to agree with you. This person seems like they know what they want and they're going after it. And I feel like if they, you know, take the time, prep for the test and get a good score, a lot of doors open. And I would say, you know, what's great is that the goals, you know, really align with what they've been doing in the military. I mean, they're going to make a jump to the private sector, but sometimes you see people with, like, lots of kind of supply chain or, you know, that type of logistics, military experience, who are saying, well, I'm going to go into VC or something completely, you know, I want to be an investment banker. And that's, like, a harder sell, you know, whereas this person, there's a real consistency, you know, in what they want to pursue. So I'm rooting for them. I think that, finish the undergraduate degree, maintain that GPA, get a good test score, and the rest should fall into place. And I would say, you know, if they hit a home run on the test, I might even, you know, look at some additional schools, or, you know, it sounds like they may, I mean, there's kind of a Southeast or West Coast focus here in the four schools they've picked. So maybe there's some other factors that we don't know about. One other thing I just wanted to mention is, you know, as you engage with this person on ApplyWire, and there was some commenting going back and forth, they mentioned that they're originally South American and fully bilingual in Spanish. So that's, like, a whole other, you know, I feel like this candidate falls into a few different buckets. And one of them, as you said, is bootstrapper. Another might be kind of first generation potentially. And, you know, they're kind of, you know, bilingual. And then obviously they fall into the military bucket. There's a lot to like. And so I feel like, given the runway that they have until the 2021 application season, they're in good shape. So I think they can just, you know, follow our advice and get this stuff done, and they should be competitive and maybe even at some bigger name schools if they want to.
Yeah. A couple of other quick things. One is try to get the test score well prepped and taken sooner rather than later, giving you enough time then to retake the test if that is necessary, because I think, as Graham has suggested, this test score is going to be important as a new viable signal. The other thing is, in terms of targeting MBB consulting jobs, be a little bit cautious there in terms of the reality of that. There are other very good consulting firms that do very well in supply chain management, and it might be worth adding a couple more of those consulting firms to the list of that sort of first target employer coming out of business school.
Yes, actually, that's a great point. So to the extent that they could throw in a few other firms, and, you know, honestly, there are some firms out there that are, like, kind of specialists in supply chain and do a lot of work in that domain. I'm not well-versed, but, you know, I'm thinking of, like, you know, Booz Allen, KPMG. I mean, there's just so many different firms out there that do consulting that they should easily be able to hit upon one or two that aren't the just elite MBB crowd, you know, so that they can sort of show that they have a broad range of, you know, possibilities going forward. Because that is a good point, because it might be that their experience is a little non-traditional, and so you wouldn't want to put all your eggs in the MBB basket necessarily as a candidate. So, Great insights, Alex, as always. So that brings us to the end of this episode of Wiretaps, which was lucky number 7 episode. And we're going to keep firing these out there. People seem to really enjoy it. And, you know, I was going to just mention that we love to see your reviews and ratings. And so please continue to rate, review, whether you're listening via Spotify, which we are available on Spotify, for those of you wondering, or Apple Podcasts. Just please, you know, send us your ratings, show us some love. We can use it. It always really helps to introduce others to this podcast and help other people with their MBA application strategy. So Alex, that's all I had for this week. Anything else from you before we move on?
No, I think you should have a great rest of your vacation, Graham, and see you back when we're actually supposed to be working for a living.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks again, everyone. Stay tuned for more episodes coming soon.
Very good.